settle for a solution to his own problems. He will also assume responsibility for resolving the problems of others as well. Someone possessed of these moral attributes has earned merits for his own life in the hereafter. At the same time, he is instrumental in freeing the world from its self-interest and selfish nature, and making it a place for delights of Islam. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, wants us to pay attention to decreasing our selfishness, and in that way, we would satisfy Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His servants. Thank you very much for being with us in this episode of Spring of the Truth, and until another one, I bid you farewell, and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha
A Palestinian woman who was abducted by Zionist regime forces from a school in the Gaza Strip recalls her harrowing experience in detention. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, sexual abuse, beatings, yelling, deprivation of food, lack of medical care, and psychological torment. This was life in the Zionist regime detention for Amina Hussein. The Palestinian mother of three was abducted by the Zionist regime forces from her place of refuge in the war-torn Gaza Strip in late December. For over 40 days, she was held in unimaginable conditions. She is one of the hundreds of Palestinian women, girls, men, and elders who have been arbitrarily detained by invading Israeli regime troops throughout the ongoing assault. They are held in incommunicado with the Zionist regime troops, taking them to unknown locations and providing no information about their whereabouts. Hussein was one of the lucky few who made it out. The following account is based on an interview she gave to the Middle East Eye, in which she recalls her harrowing experience in the Zionist regime's detention. Amina Hussein lived in Gaza City with her two daughters, aged 13 and 12, and her son, aged 6. 4 days after the war started on October 7th, her sister joined them in the house after her home was bombed. For nearly a month, they lived under the horrifying sounds of relentless nearby air strikes. The city, home to nearly 1 million people before the war, had come under a bombing campaign seen as among the most destructive in recent history, proportionally causing more damage than that of the Allied bombing of Germany in the Second World War. Desperate for a sense of safety, Amina Hussein left with her three children to take shelter at a school in Gaza, but that wasn't enough. Hussein told MEE, "The army kept obsessively calling my mobile phone and asking everyone to leave the school," she said. "I gathered my children and went seeking refuge at a school in the central Gaza Strip in the Nusayrat area, but it was so unbelievably crowded that we couldn't find a place to stand up, let alone sit or sleep. I ended up walking around the schools looking for a safe place for my children until we found a school to stay in at the Alboraj refugee camp. I stayed there for the next 8 days. On the 9th day, the school was bombed by the Israeli army, although they knew it was sheltering displaced women, children, and the entire families. Thank God, my children and I survived the bombing. Next, I sought shelter at another school. Displaced multiple times in less than 2 months, Amene Hossein was relieved to finally find a suitable shelter in the central Gaza Strip. But her worst nightmare hadn't started yet. Less than a month after arriving at the latest school, which MEE is not naming to protect the identity of Hossein, the Zionist regime troops arrived. They viciously broke in at 2:30 after midnight, ordering everyone to leave the school. They attacked everyone. The soldiers took the boys out and stripped them naked. They dragged all the men out with their boxers. We stayed like this until 10 in the morning. At around 3 p.m., the soldiers told the women to take their children and leave, ordering them to head south. Speaking through a microphone, they said each woman could take only one bag and her children. I tried to gather all the food cans I could and take the most necessary things for our survival and leave. As women began to exit the school, some of them were stopped. Amine Hossein was among them. She said, "The soldiers asked for my ID and took me along with 9 other women. I didn't know any of them, as they were from Alboraj while I am from Gaza. A masked man pointed at me and the soldier called my name and asked me to enter a tent, claiming there is a doctor there who wishes to speak briefly." To comfort her children, Amine Hossein said she was going to get them food and water from the tent. But when she entered, an Israeli female officer was waiting for her inside. There were no doctors. "Remove everything," the officer said, speaking in Arabic. Undressed, Amine Hossein was searched from head to toe. When she didn't find anything, she asked me to dress up and I thought I was being released. When suddenly I felt the soldier behind me sticking a gun to my back and screaming at me to walk. "Where am I going?" I asked the Zionist regime troop. And he replied by telling me to shut up and continue walking until he put me inside a big van with other women inside. Amine Hossein said, "He handcuffed me, hit me with his weapon, and tried to hand me my ID card. It was dark. I couldn't see anything, and I couldn't catch it. So he hit me with his weapon again and gave it to me." The van then set off for a long drive. Eventually, Amine Hossein was taken to a small room along with the 8 other women abducted with her, as well as 4 more. All 13 were put in a dark small room, which looked like a cage where animals are kept. According to Amine Hossein, she said, "There were thin mattresses in the cages with some blankets, but no pillows. It was like sleeping on the cold floor. We were kept handcuffed the whole time. The bathrooms were all filthy and we were afraid of getting sick just from using the bathroom. There were no running water. You walk around with a bottle of water that is for drinking and washing. The girls tried to help and support one another. We wanted to pray, but there was no water for pre-prayer ablution, so we used soil instead. For food, they brought a small amount each day, which was barely enough for one person. We barely had any food. It was extremely difficult to manage without food and water, without clothes and blankets. My body was sick and exhausted. I was beaten and violated. I felt I was going to collapse. I was worried sick about my children, wondering if they were safe, if they had food and water, if they were warm and had someone to care for them. The group of women spent 11 days in this facility, during which Amina Hussein was taken for interrogation twice and experienced no less traumatizing. Amina Hussein recalled, "They asked me many questions about my family, my husband, and my siblings. The soldiers kept threatening to hurt my children, shouting at me that if I don't tell the truth, they will torture and kill my kids. They kept asking about my brothers and sisters. One of my brothers is a lawyer and two others are professors, and one is a doctor and one barber. They are working people. They have no connection to anything else. They kept insisting that they were activists. And when I asked what they meant, they said I knew the answer. During the interrogations, they tied me to a chair, and a female soldier stood next to me, kicking me and shoving me with her weapon to answer properly. They also asked about my social media accounts, and I told them I only had Facebook. They threatened they would keep watching me on it. After suffering in this undisclosed detention facility for 11 days, Amina Hussein was then moved again, this time to a prison.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, both be physically fit and spiritually fit. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So welcome to A to Z. We're talking about this Islamic lifestyle, of course, something that will bring comfort and ease to our very fast-paced life in this modern day in which we just seem to be surrounded by troubles and trials and tribulations and stress and anxiety. Well, one of the things that's really important when we're talking about Islamic lifestyle, well, primarily it's breaks down into two aspects. One is to be physically fit, and the other one is to be spiritually fit. Now, of course, because of the modern era in which we live in, we have a lot of concepts in this modern era which unfortunately are very materialistic and individualistic and utilitarian when it comes, you know, to their essence. So one of the things that, you know, this so-called post-Renaissance man has come up with is this idea of physical fitness. Now, why do they emphasize so much, physical fitness? Well, it's because they only can look at the physical aspect of a human being. These various different post-Renaissance theories, they only look at the material aspect, the physical body. And Islam, of course, being a comprehensive religion, which covers all of the possible bases that are necessary for the perfection of a human being? Well, we find that, yes, the physical fitness and the physical aspect of a human being is quite emphasized. It is important, and it is known as one of the blessings. And so to eat healthy, to be healthy, you know, to exercise in an adequate and appropriate manner, to take care of this body which Allah has gifted to us, you know, and the various different things that comes about with being physically fit. These are things which Islam really emphasizes, but Islam also emphasizes the other side of the coin, of course, which is spiritual fitness. Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how when it comes to Islamic lifestyle, we both have to take into consideration being physically fit and being spiritually fit. Now, of course, we know a lot about being physically fit because of this very post-Renaissance theories that, you know, specifically want to focus only on the material aspect of a human being. And really, when you study into the phenomenon, you will realize that many of the problems that have come about in the, you know, modern Western world are precisely because they have a tendency to only focus on the material aspect of human being. So they end up ignoring the spiritual aspect of this lifestyle, this comprehensive lifestyle. And of course, when you ignore an aspect of a human being, well, it causes stress and anxiety and tension. And in reality, it causes a disbalance. And that disbalance is what we see, which is happening across the world with human beings. Now, this spiritual aspect is something that Islam also highly emphasizes, and perhaps in certain places it can be said that Islam overemphasizes the spiritual aspect of a human being, because yes, Islam does say that we should take care of the physical body, but the physical body will eventually remain here. It is the spiritual body and the spiritual aspect of a human being which continues on to the next life. And this is where, for example, the salah, the daily prayers, the fasting, the khums, the charity, the sadaqah, promotion of doing good things, this prevention of doing evil things, the various different moral and ethical virtues, and these good qualities, right? Staying away from evil habits, submission to carnal desires, and these kind of bad things which really destroy our spiritual fitness. And of course, there's many, many different books that have been written about this subject of how to be spiritually fit in Islam. But of course, we have to end the program talking about Islamic lifestyle with this, that yes, we should focus on our physical aspect and being physically fit, but we must also spend a lot of time and a lot of effort, you know, in being spiritually fit in order to achieve that Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit, but behind this resounding success lies a dark secret. toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. A prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-Block, this is where all the medical testing, the human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on, like, two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time, because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would put the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, their new toxic products reach the market. These multinationals all have one thing in common: a culture of secrecy.
You're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. In the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry...
Everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, it was secure.
...are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action. Lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world if they would have informed us back then that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't have made it up.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day. Okay. So
all day long, people were coming
in? Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This material is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland, the birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin
levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, the company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow was acting in its own interests, so Dow was trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life here, near the river. This is where she raised her family.
We used to have all trails that went down through here. The land is very fertile, and it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just, you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore and they could build forts and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
Nope. We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Buchelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Buchelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007, when tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency. The levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
My oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have 5 kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. some to a lesser degree and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Buchelter, was a doctor. A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. The results of my husband's, this is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Buchelter's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, 3 times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died. And would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards, like Alice Buchelter's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Xuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there is no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They are dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Xuan shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. Up to 3 kilometers from the factory, 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells. Like in Shakya's family home, they've lived in this house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar,
a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011. But for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters all over the world listening to IRB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I welcome you, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, among our brothers here, dear Ali Nasser, Hussein Ruhullah, and Hassan Nasrullah. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome everyone.
Wa alaikum assalam, sir. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. Ali Nasser, how is it going?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
All right. And Hassan?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
All right. So, everyone is fine. Hope you are doing well. Dear listeners, let's get started. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 30, Surah Al-A'raf, on page
153. The same page.
The same page as previous sessions.
Yes.
So, brothers and sisters did not hear you. What page?
153. 3.
So, brothers and sisters, turn to page 153 of the Quran Karim. Hurry up. Let's get it started. Surah Al-A'raf, Ayah
30.
That's our topic for today. Let's listen to the recitation of this ayah at the very beginning of our class and then get started.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Fariqan hada wa fariqan haqqa alayhim ad-dalalah. إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين أولياء من دون الله ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون.
Good job. Nice recitation. MashaAllah, MashaAllah. فريقاً هدى. Did I say أعوذ بالله and بسم الله before reading this ayah?
No.
Alright, so one important rule, in terms of recitation, we have some etiquettes. It means we have some steps to, for the respect of the Quran, okay? We should do those steps, and they are so good, and then start reading the Quran. Yeah. So, Allah Almighty Himself says in the Quran, وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ فَاسْتَعِذْ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. Whenever you wanted to read the Quran, say A'udhu Billah Okay?
Yes.
Seek refuge of Allah Almighty from the shaitan, okay? And then start. Okay?
Yes.
Then we start everything, every good work by the name of
Allah. Allah.
So we sit properly and with wudu, okay? Any time you wanted to recite the Quran with wudu and start face to face of the Qibla, okay? This is in the direction of Qibla, it has a lot of thawab, okay? Even one of my teachers, I've seen him, okay? Whenever he wants to perform wudu, he stands in the direction of Qibla and he performs wudu. Okay? They are really care about these points, okay? So whenever you want to do a good work, okay? Good work. In the direction of Qibla, stand and do it, okay? You want to read a book in the direction of Qibla. You gain thawab, okay? Whenever you want to read Quran, you read a hadith, okay? In the direction of Qibla. It has more value.
Yes.
Alright?
Yeah.
So, in the direction of Qibla, sit properly, put the Quran in front of you on the rahl, okay? And you can say, A'udhu Billah, with wudu you are, inshallah, okay? A'udhu Billah, Bismillah, start. That's the way we should do. So, I get back. A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Fariqan Hada wa Fariqan Haqqa Alayhim Uddalalah. إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين أولياء من دون الله ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون. All right, who can read this?
Yes.
Ali Nasir, can you read it?
Can I read?
Yeah.
Read. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم فريقا هدى وفريقا حق عليهم الضلالة
ما شاء الله
إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين أولياء من دون الله ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون
Good job. فريقا
Hada.
That ya, Hassan, do you see that ya? Hada?
Yes.
That's a ya. Why don't you read it haday?
I think it's not the fatha on ya. It's alif mad. So you should recite it hada.
Hada. It's called. We have three types of alif. We have alif, we have dagger alif, okay?
Yes.
Which is that small alif.
Yes.
And we have also Alif Maqsura, which is, this is Alif Maqsura, okay?
Yeah. Yes.
We have Dagger Alif, and also we have Alif Maqsura. So Alif Maqsura sits on, sometimes on Waw, like Salat, Salawat it is. It's written Salawat, but it is pronounced as?
Salat.
Zakawat, Zakat. But this one, for example, Hada'a, it is Hadaya, or for example, Hada'i, Hadai. Whatever you read, but that's wrong. You should read it. Hada. Hada. Okay. وَفَرِيقًا حَقَّ 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 عَلَيْهِمُ الضَّلَالَ هِمُ عَلَيْهِمْ It ends with Mim Sakin.
Yes.
But since you have Hamzatul Wasl right after it,
yes,
you gotta join them. How do you read it?
عَلَيْهِمُ الضَّلَالَ
عَلَيْهِمُ الضَّلَالَ ضَلَالَ تُو In rules of stopping at the end of words, okay, at the end of ayah or wherever you make a pause, we had a rule, if you remember, let me see if you remember, the rule of how to stop at the end, at a word having ta marbuta. Do you remember?
Yes.
What's the rule? Ta marbuta, what is ta marbuta?
Ta marbuta.
Ta marbuta is ta marbuta. The ha that has two dots on the top. That ha. Dalalatu. That's called ta marbuta.
Yes.
So, in case you want to stop at a word having ta marbuta, what do you do?
The ta marbuta will change into ha.
The ta marbuta changes to?
Ha.
Ha. What about the harakat, the sign that it has?
It changes to sakin.
Yes. Whatever it has changes to?
Sakin.
Sukun.
Sukun.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it means ta marbuta changes to a sakin ha.
Yes.
Dalalatu, if you make a pause, Hassan, how do you read it? Dala
la.
La. Super. Good job.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا
القرآن. Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا
إنهم again همزة الوث right after it إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين. Hassan, it's not شيطان. Yes. شيطان is singular.
Yes.
Okay, grammatically, and shayateen is the plural form of it. All right, plural form. So Allah Almighty says, a part of mankind, He, Allah Almighty, has guided, and a part of humankind, okay, has deserved to be consigned to error, for they took devils for guardians instead of Allah, and supposed they were guided. Sometimes, guys. Sometimes people are on the wrong path.
Okay? Yes, yeah.
People are of many kinds, okay? Sometimes they are on the right path and they know they are on the
right
path. Sometimes people are on the right path, but they
don't
know they are on the right path. Sometimes people are on the wrong path and they
know
they are on the wrong path. Sometimes people are on the wrong path, but they
don't know
they are on the wrong path. Sometimes people don't know, are they in the right path, on the right path, or on the wrong path, and they don't know that
what
anything about. Okay,
yeah,
about it. So we should be people who know they are on the right path. Okay, and they know it. Okay, we should be on the right path, and we
should know it.
Should know we are on the right path. Sometimes those who are on the wrong path, okay, they might, because they don't know they are on the wrong path, okay, they might think that, yeah, we are on the right path. While they are
on the wrong path.
They might be loving it. They might be enjoying their life, okay? They earn a lot of money. Everything is okay. They steal people's property and nothing happens to them, okay? Wow, I have everything. Come on, that's not yours. That's others' properties. So they might feel good, but in the day of judgment, inshallah, they will see. And in this world as well, they will see, okay? They
yes,
have seen this.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the tajweed points. Fariqan hada. Fariqa. If you stop, but here you don't have to stop. It's not a proper place to stop, okay?
Yes.
How do you read it?
Fariqa. Fariqan.
Fariqan hada.
Yeah. Fariqan
hada. Move on. Wa fariqan.
وفريقا حق عليهم الضلالة.
أحسن. قيلا, we have a stopping sign. Hassan, tell us.
As you said, it's stopping sign. It says it's better to stop. It's better to make a pause there. But you can continue.
Good job. إنهم, make sure you stretch the sound of noon and a nasal sound. إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين أولياء. Or awliya'a, which one? Extension or without extension?
Extension.
Awliya'a. The mother is wajib?
Yes.
Min dunillah. How do you read it?
Yab ikhfa.
Read it.
Min dunillah.
Ahsan. Wa yahsabuna annahum muhtadun. The last point, Ali Nasir, tell us.
Yeah, we have idgham mithlain.
Idgham mithlain, where?
On Meme. Annahum muhtadun.
Idgham mithlain says you have to extend the sound of meme for how many counts?
Two counts.
That's all. Yes, with nasal sound. So, I read the ayah. That will be the last part, okay? Listen and repeat. Ready, everyone? Give me a big yes.
Yes.
Brothers and sisters, I don't hear you, though, but I can still feel like you're ready. Let's get started. Listen and repeat. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
فريقا هدى وفريقا حق عليهم الضلالة.
فريقا هدى وفريقا حق عليهم الضلالة.
إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين أولياء من دون الله ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون.
إنهم اتخذوا الشياطين أولياء من دون الله ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون.
ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون.
ويحسبون أنهم مهتدون.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
Ahsantum, Allah bless you, inshallah. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for being with us. That's all from us for today. Stay with Arab English Radio. See you next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. وعجل فرجهم.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه. لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.